This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hello, Bechdel heads. This is Jamie Loftus.
This is Caitlin Durante.
So this is an episode that we recorded shortly before the lockdown began.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't put anyone in danger.
No, we didn't. Just so you know, it was still allowed back then, 2 weeks ago, with the wonderful returning guest, Sita Zhang, about Mulan, because originally Mulan was going to be coming out.
Right.
That obviously it is no longer the case, or if it's released, it won't be in theaters, because what are theaters really anymore? But we just wanted to say hello.
Yes.
And that we hope you're doing well. We hope you're feeling well and staying inside if you can. And if you do have to be out working, we are with you, and we hope we can be a nice part of your day, and that we love you.
Mm-hmm. Also, as to be expected, I'm sure this will come as a surprise to no one, but the upcoming live shows that we had scheduled, at least the ones in Austin and Boston, the Austin one we had announced and sold tickets for, it was sold out. We unfortunately had to cancel that.
And everyone will be refunded.
Mm-hmm.
We are still waiting to hear about LA on the 15th, so we'll see. Stay tuned. In the meantime, if you need extra Bechdel in your life, our Patreon is there for you with extra episodes. We know a lot of people have been burning through a lot of episodes quickly. Mm-hmm. And we have plans in April to do some commentary tracks for you to watch while you're at home.
Audio commentary April.
Yeehaw, baby. In the meantime, please enjoy this episode and Mulan.
Enjoy.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi everybody. I was like, where do I was trying to think of a fun in.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm just excited for this episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie Loftus.
My name's Caitlin Durante.
And this is our podcast about the portrayal of women in movies.
Where we use the Bechdel test.
Ever heard of it?
To jump off, have a jumping off point.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, just do a deeper dive.
Not the whole podcast. Common misconception.
Mm-hmm.
I love when someone's like, oh, I've listened to your podcast, which first of all, there's never a need to lie about that. I've never been less hurt. Like when someone's like, I haven't listened to your podcast, I'm like, makes sense. You know, like, why would you listen to a podcast? To shame our audience.
you silly sods.
But I like when someone's kind of faking it, and then they're like, oh, that's the one where you spend an hour and a half figuring out if it passes the Bechdel. I'm like, do you think we just print out the script? Like, what do you? And they're like, I don't know. It looks like that's a male character. So that line isn't going to pass. On to the next line. We should do an April Fool's episode that is just
that, like us going through the script of The Shawshank Redemption and just doing what like people who are lying about listening to the show think it is. Anyways, this is the Bechdel. We use the Bechdel test, which is a metric invented by cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test, that requires that a piece of media have an exchange between two female identifying characters with names that is about something other than a man.
Should be easy enough.
Especially for this movie.
Right? Well,
I don't know.
It's
complicated.
It's kind of the no.
Well, it's complicated. Sometimes that's the thing. Not a perfect metric, but also we just have a lot to talk about today. I'm so excited for today. This episode has been a long time coming. We were going to do it a while ago, but and then we found out that there was a live action reboot of this movie coming out, and then we had to postpone doing this episode by like a year.
Yeah.
Which has been a painful wait, but the wait is over.
But here we are.
We're talking about Mulan.
Woo!
Finally. Yes.
The day has come. Yes. And yeah, we there's so much ground to cover. So without much further ado, let's introduce our guest.
Yes.
She is a writer, a comedian. She's been a guest of ours previously on the Crazy Rich Asians episode, and she's also made a contribution on our Gremlins episode, which we were all very grateful for. And she's amazing. It's Sita Shong. Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming back.
So excited to talk about Mulan, which was one of the first jokes I ever wrote. Actually about Mulan.
Wait, really?
What was it?
I think I had this bit that I was, you know, I recently booked a job. I got a role in the live action remake of Mulan. Mm. And people in the audience would clap because sometimes you go to an audience that actually doesn't know you're joking.
Yeah.
And they're like, so it's very sweet when they do, they're like clapping. Uh-huh. And then I would say, well, I'm going to be playing Mushu. And because it's always been my dream to play Eddie Murphy. So
I guess they've brought back Mushu for the live action remake.
But
Eddie Murphy is not voicing it, but I just saw an IMDb thing where Mushu.
I don't know if Mushu talks.
I don't know.
Maybe Mushu.
Well, maybe my information is wrong, but I just today watched one of those like IMDb.com originals where they like do
they're all bangers.
But they're like, people were wondering, would Mulan's animal friends return for the live action reboot? And no one knew for sure, but it seems like Mushu, I don't know about the cricket.
What does he look like? Is it like one of those like scary, like Lion King, like photorealistic, like,
I mean,
he's a real Komodo dragon. You're like, that's not why I come to the movie.
But it would be so weird based on what I've seen in the trailers, which seems like a Disney movie. It's like a gritty action movie.
It's the first PG-13 movie.
Whoa, it's PG-13?
Of the reboots. It's the first PG-13 because I guess that they're doing some real war shit in there.
Huh.
Yeah,
I mean, Mulan is making some like serious, like I guess it's called wushu fantasy kind of move. Mm. So lots of wire work that's really like body intensive. It should be incredible to see.
I'm really excited about it. I'm like, I mean, is Mulan the first Disney princess who presumably kills people?
Oh,
we don't see her rack up a body count in the cartoon, but I feel like it's implied that she would have killed someone.
She killed Shane, the main bad guy, right? She lit him up. Yeah.
She kills someone.
Well, also, I mean, she crushes a lot of people with that avalanche.
She maybe kills a lot.
Yeah, a lot of people are in that avalanche.
But they also seem to mostly come back and survive that.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about how the enemies in this war are portrayed too, which is like
super racist.
Yes, like I mean, we have so much because they're like, oh, like people who are on the opposite side of the war. Evil, we're gonna draw them darker than the rest of the cast, and they're zombies.
Uh-huh.
And they have like animal eyes.
Yeah, like the dark, like it's the way that it looks like the beast in Beauty and like
It's a crazy way to regard like the Huns, which is like the stand-in for the invaders of China at this time.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because he's got like fangs too.
Literal.
And he like rises
eyes?
From the dead, fangs. And you're like, this is not a human.
And this was the first time watching this movie that I love, but like there are some things where you're like, wait a second, I don't know what this war is about.
No.
What if Mulan is on the wrong side of the war? Like, we don't know what they're fighting over.
What if the Huns are just trying to like, they can like uprise against like a very like totalitarian empire?
We don't know. They don't tell us. They're just like, well, we love Mulan.
So she's probably on the right side of the war, but you're like, there. We don't know for sure. Guarantee. War is fucked up. Did you? That's in this my official movie, statement.
Perhaps glorifies war a bit.
Yes. But that said,
it's also a cartoon.
Does that make it better or worse?
I don't know.
I don't know if there's another Disney movie that deals with war. Like, right. What? I mean, I guess Lion King, in a sense, like the skirmishes with Uncle Scar is kind of warlike.
I guess that is.
Because it's like different
but
factions.
But it's so isolated. Yeah. It's such a small battle.
No, this is historical. There's an actual war that happens. There's people that are divided politically. And then there's sort of the duty to the country, which is like what Mulan really stands for, right?
Right. Like there are some like nationalism undertones.
Super nationalistic.
Like, yeah. Duty to the, I mean, which I don't know. I don't even know how to feel about that. But it ended up, the military stuff in this, you're just like, whoa. It's just very, and I was thinking about that because there's been a lot of writing about the reboot and about they're like, well, is this movie like, being too, you know, over the top with like funded by military stuff and like nationalism stuff. And it's like, that may be true in some ways, but it's like most, like, I mean, so many popular American movies are funded by the military that I feel like it's disingenuous
everything
to be like
that
this
Michael
movie.
Bay ever directed.
Literally, the entire Transformers is funded by the fucking Marines. Yeah. Like, it's
so true.
We talked about this in Independence Day with Lindsay Ellis, but like there's this like such a well-documented history of like people who have a good relationship with the military get free tanks to use in their movies, and then their movies make $1 billion, and you're just like, military industrial complex is oh boy,
is it not good, Jamie?
quote me on that.
So wait, let me get this straight.
Yeah, she's in full camouflage.
War is bad. War
I'll
is bad.
It. I'll say it.
And
Kaylin.
The military industrial complex also bad.
Also bad.
Okay.
I know we went into this being like maybe it's good, but I'm here to tell you it's actually very bad.
Okay. I mean, the part of the military sequence I found interesting was like how whimsical the army training was. That was definitely like that's definitely like a place in a Disney movie where that should happen, because in most war movies the training is definitely not whimsical.
Right.
This was just like, I mean, climb a giant pole with a belt around your waist. And then also a question, is Lee Sean like the only male love interest that takes off his shirt in a Disney movie?
Well, Aladdin is pretty shirtless.
But
his nipples are covered.
That's true.
Lee Sean is like fully showing us male nipples.
His body is very suddenly, you're like, oh,
it's right there.
Hello?
An awakening.
Oh, right. And then I like went back to my, like, I was like 5 when this movie came out. I was just like, oh, wow. Like, just like your weird little like baby brain being like, this is different. Like, this is new. Yeah, I remembered when that scene happened.
I mean, hot.
Yes.
Let's dive in officially.
Yeah.
We
already talked about the military industrial complex.
Well, we've hardly begun. Sita, what's your relationship history with this movie?
So I was talking to Caitlin a little bit earlier, and I kind of missed the boat on this movie when I was growing up, because I got a little too old for Mulan when it first came out. So I actually didn't watch it until I turned like 30.
Oh, wow.
And so I came to it super late, watched it when I was 30. So moved by it, totally cried after like a first viewing as an adult. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh wow, a story about the headstrong only daughter of a Chinese family. I can't possibly relate to that. So it was very like, I should have known that this was coming, and I still was not prepared for how much it moved me.
Yeah.
And I watched this again just like right before the podcast, just to refresh my brain on the details. And it's still a very action-packed story that has a lot to do with how the protagonist is self-motivated. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that like we love to see in female characters. And she's so smart and has her own morality, and she has such conviction, and that's really like what gets her through all of the movie, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love that turn at the end where she has to dress as a concubine, so she successfully passes as a woman. Right. there's a lot of like drag king stuff in the beginning, which I really love.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then there's like kind of drag queen stuff towards the end, and I was like, this is such kind of a drag centric movie.
There's a lot of drag,
so much like, yeah, I mean, the gender performance, like the theme of gender performance in this movie is like, it's kind of fucking incredible. Like, it's, it is really Yeah.
Talk more about it.
There's so much. Well, we will.
We definitely will. I mean, there's so much to talk. I mean, because there are certain elements. I just have never watched this movie in not a, like, I love Mulan lens. That's the only way I've ever watched this movie is, like, this is one of my favorite movies ever. This movie came out when I was 5 years old, and I don't remember seeing it for the first time, but I know that I saw it like 500 times. We did a whole Mulan Halloween in my family that I checked the pictures. I'm like, okay, we were not racist. Because you have to check when you're a white kid. You have to be like, did my parents do a good job? I think that they did a pretty good job.
Okay, good.
I'll show you the picture. But like, but
like, that should be the front page of the podcast for this week.
Like, for the record, because you got to be careful. But I loved it so much. I loved just everything about it. The Stevie, one of the most cursed Disney musical collaborations in history between Stevie Wonder and 98 Degrees.
That song in the credits. I was like, what is happening?
I was ranking. I was like, I think it's the second most cursed collab. I love it, but it's the only more cursed collab of the Disney Renaissance is NSYNC and Phil Collins. That's the worst one. True to Your Heart kind of slaps. It's good. but you're just like, how did these people meet each other?
Wait, was that like Tarzan?
Yeah,
NSYNC
and Phil Collins.
Okay, yeah.
And I think I've mentioned this before, but in my favorite press junket of all time, which is NSYNC with Phil Collins, and... and it's like peak NSYNC. It's 1999. Mm-hmm. And NSYNC, like, Lance Bass is like, yeah, Phil Collins is pretty much the sixth member of NSYNC.
I wonder how Genesis feels about that.
Right. And Phil Collins is just grimacing. You're just like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. All that to say, I loved Mulan. At the time, I feel like it was the first genuinely empowered Disney princess I had ever seen. It was because there is like some 90s girl power elements to this, but it really hit for me.
Sure.
My cousin was Warrior Mulan, I was Reflection Mulan. Ooh. And my brother was Mushu.
You were super deep.
I was really deep into Mulan. We were just, it was a whole family, like, we were just like, we're Mulan heads. So I love it.
Yeah.
What's your history with it?
Sita, I'm like you, where I had aged out of kind of Disney movies, and I joke about having aged back into them because I'm going to see Onward tomorrow.
Ooh.
But yeah, I was 12 when this movie came out, so I was like, I'm too cool for cartoons. So it just like came out at the wrong time for me, I guess. And so I didn't grow up with it, and I think I only saw it maybe once or twice, just sort of in passing, not paying that much attention to it in my like kind of more adolescent or early adult years. And then I've watched it 3 times now to prep for the episode because I'm like, shit, like I hate that I missed this when I was younger because like it's so good. Like,
yeah,
I mean there's plenty to talk about, but I love so much about it. I love the songs. I love the music. And I love, there's like these, all these great montages.
This is the first viewing that I think, because I haven't seen this movie in like 6 or 7 years. I think this is the first time I've seen it since I have become a B.D. Wong stan. I didn't realize I don't think I knew who he was the last time I saw this movie, like in high school. Mm-hmm. And like, I was like, wait, what? Like, oh. So much good stuff.
There's so much. And yeah, I mean, you were touching on just the character of Mulan, just like being so smart and resourceful and outspoken. And like, yeah, it gives us a lot to talk about.
Yes. It's also, I think, for girls that weren't like kind of girly girls, like it has that resounding, like the Reflection Mulan song. That's very much about like trying to figure out who you're supposed to be in this world that tells you that you're supposed to be one way, but you feel a totally different way.
Yeah.
And that kind of plays into the gender performance of it.
Sure.
But that song also probably, like, I was thinking about Mulan as a whole for young women. I was like, this is a very good movie to also watch if you're like a female comic amongst a lot of male comics where you're like, where she's trying to fit into the army. I was like, oh yeah, I felt that before.
Right.
Where you're like, everything is disgusting, but you just have to like go along with it.
You have to be like, yeah, this is great. And people are still like, we hate you. You're like, cool. Yeah, I was just talking about how we were getting ready for this episode today in a room with two gay men, and they were both like
reflection like spoke to me so much when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
Of yeah, I mean, because mm-hmm. it is such like a general theme for people who feel like they don't fit into what the prescribed mm-hmm. norm is, where like it's, and then I did some research. I was like, oh, I wonder if this is a common read. And it seems like there is like a fair amount of writing from queer and trans writers mm-hmm. who are like, reflection was like it.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I easily see that. There's that line where she says, like, when will my reflection show who I am inside?
I mean, and I think we've heard a similar read in The Little Mermaid, where yes. like Ariel's transformation, mm-hmm. Yeah, like feeling like you're in the wrong skin. And mm-hmm.
friend of the cast, frustration of it. Joan Ford spoke to that
yes.
a bit.
Yes.
Definitely.
So, I mean, I feel like that's always a cool... There's plenty of criticism of like huge pop culture Disney movies, but the fact that like there are those big themes that they can speak to that make kids who feel out of place feel heard is really cool.
Yeah.
So,
and there are such massive movies too.
Yeah.
Basically everyone sees them. Mm-hmm. So right. it's not just like, oh, this is a message that like a few people see. It's like, this is a message that like across a generation kids right. can see. Yeah. And that does make a difference. That really does.
I, one of my closest friends from high school, she immigrated from Haiti around the time this movie came out. And it was one of the first movies she saw in America. And she was like so impacted by it that she majored in Chinese in college.
Oh my God.
She's fluent and she works in international relations now.
Wow.
So she, I'm like, Mulan, like people love Mulan. It changed lives.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Wow. All right. So I'll do the recap and then we'll get into the discussion. We open, we're in ancient China. There's an attack, a Hun invasion led by the big, scary Shan Yu. And the emperor is like, this will not stand. We got to recruit people from my army to fight these invaders. Then we meet Mulan. She Woo! Is preparing.
Yay! Got to cheer. She's good.
She is preparing to go to the village matchmaker because her family wants her to be matched with a good husband so that Mulan can bring honor to the family, because that's how a woman in the world of this movie brings honor to her family.
We meet the we meet her mom and we're like, oh, I wonder if this relationship will be explored. And then it's like, no. And they're like, funny grandma trope. Yep. I'm like, okay, yep. It's kind of funny.
And then her meeting with the matchmaker goes disastrously, and she tells Mulan that you will never bring honor to your family. And that's when Mulan sings Reflection about how, you know, maybe being a bride is not the part she's supposed to play. Then the army recruiters show up, and one of them is this guy, Chifu, and he's like, hey, the emperor is ordering one man from every family to serve in the imperial army. And Mulan's father is prepared to serve, but Mulan thinks that he should not have to fight. I think it's implied that he was already a warrior in
they
a previous
say, yeah,
war.
They yes, say he had been mm-hmm. injured.
And he was injured and he like walks with a cane and stuff like that. So she's like, he should not have to fight. So she decides to take his place. She cuts off her hair. She dons her father's armor to disguise herself as a man and then rides off into the night. And her family discovers that she has left, but they realize that if they reveal what she's done, she will be killed. So they can't go to stop her.
Meanwhile, Mushu.
Yes.
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy is also
there. Shows up.
He shows up.
There's a lot of hijinks and mishaps here, but basically he's like, all right, I'm going to go watch over and help Mulan.
I feel like he's just kind of warming up for Shrek this whole movie. Like, he literally is just like, maybe I could make $1 billion off of doing this. He's just warming up for Donkey.
Exactly.
Mushu.
Uh-huh. And never forget Shrek.
Never forget Shrek.
Never forget.
How could we?
Okay, so with the help of Mushu and Mulan's lucky cricket, she goes off to join the army. And meanwhile, a young soldier named Shang, voiced by B.D. Wong, and the singing voice is Donny Osmond, by the way.
I know, the masked singer himself.
Okay.
He came in second place the first season.
he is made captain of this army. And I didn't catch this at first, but it's like a nepotism thing.
Yeah.
Higher,
yeah,
basically, yeah. Where his father is the general. Yeah.
I didn't either. I don't know why...
when I was a kid, I'm like, I don't know if I was just, I was so hyper focused on like, mm-hmm. I love Mulan, mm-hmm. but I never realized that Li Shang was nepotism and that he was grieving for like half of the
movie because his father dies.
Oh my God.
I totally forgot that.
I thought that scene where he sticks the sword down, puts his dad's helmet on top, and Mulan sees him grieve. I was like, that's the moment she was like, panties are wet.
A man like, showing like, emotion?
Emotion, exactly. On right. the battlefield, right after his father's death, we're just like, we're all there. We're
after
in love.
After she's seen him shirtless, and then you're like, oh, she, yeah. Yeah.
Inappropriate, but you get the sentiment.
And then that's, like, I think, a great moment in terms of, like, showing how, like, I mean, they don't go all the way with masculinity in this movie and kind of examining it, mm-hmm. but the way that, you know, he has to maintain his role of authority, compartmentalize like enormous grief.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And then
yeah,
he gets totally. On his horse and he's like, it's fine. And everyone's like, ooh, it isn't. And then they have to, you know,
yeah.
War
indeed.
They
bad.
Have to war.
War is bad.
War is
we learned
bad.
Today.
In addition to other things.
Yes. Okay, so he is made captain and he begins training this group of recruits that Mulan has joined. And she says, hey guys, yes, I am definitely a man and my name is Ping. But Mulan as Ping kind of gets off on the wrong foot accidentally with a lot of the other soldiers. But eventually she wins them over and they become friends. And the training begins and Mulan is not good at anything. She almost gets sent home. But then there's that fun training montage and we see her get really good at everything.
And one of the greatest songs in Disney history.
Be a man.
It's so, and I didn't really like in that long slapper montage, mm-hmm. you see the Mary Jane trope entirely like done away with because it would be like, I feel like a classic Disney mistake to be like, and she got to war and she just was good at war. Like, but it's like, you see that she learns it and really like commits to it. And so do the men around her. And it's like, it's a struggle for mm-hmm. everyone. And it's like goofy, but at least you're like, okay, at least they're showing like, it's not that Mary Sue, like
right.
chosen one kind yeah. of narrative. Like she really
right,
busted her
in,
ass to be a great soldier.
We see that in Aladdin with Jasmine, where she's like awesome at like flipping over across buildings. And she's yeah. like, I'm a fast learner. And she like, yeah, it's like, you've never left your palace. Like, how are you?
Right. You're just like, you've never left any. Yeah. There. When would you have practiced that?
Right.
That's a really good point, because I was reading about the legend, and in the Chinese legend, she actually learned martial arts and sword fighting and everything
yeah.
from her dad. But if you had gone that route with the story, you would have been not able to have the training montage, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I think what's so great about the training montage, in addition to the song and everything, is that it's the camaraderie with her friends.
Yeah.
That's what builds like an army, right? Like,
yeah.
Speaking of the military industrial complex, one of the many reasons that so many men are so wedded and bonded to it is the commonality of experience of going through war or
absolutely.
Going through mm-hmm. training. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And like seeing that, I don't know. I like that they not only managed to show that, but they managed to show it in maybe the most entertaining way in
right.
the history of war movies.
I know. Because like, compare this training montage to like the boot camp sequence in Full Metal Jacket, and you're just like, oh, these are tonally very different.
It's like, we know which one is more realistic,
right.
but which one has Donnie
Osmond's
in it?
Which one's fun? Right. Okay, so then she goes through the montage. She gets really good at everything. She's the only one who can figure out how to get to the top of the pole to retrieve the arrow that Shang had fired up there. It's so good.
When she gets to the
she's
top.
She's so smart. And by the end, she's at the top of her class, so
yeah.
to speak. Meanwhile, the Hun army is advancing, and Mulan and her fellow soldiers are sent to fight. They come upon Shan Yu and his giant army of Huns, who start to advance on them, and they're about to aim a cannon at Shan Yu, but Mulan is like, no, I have a better idea. And she aims it at the mountain, which causes that huge avalanche that buries Shan Yu's army. And everyone's like, hip, hip, hooray for Ping. But Mulan, as Ping, has been wounded. And when her wound is tended to, that's when everyone discovers that she is a woman.
Right.
And
in one of the rewatching it, goofiest music stings I've ever heard of, like when Li Shang comes in. Oh, well, when Li Shang comes into the tent and Mulan is revealed to have titties. There's a sinister titty sting where it goes like, it goes like, dun dun dun, and it's like, she has tits, and then everyone's like, like, it's so weirdly soapy in the middle of this great movie. But I like rewound it. I was like, wait a second, they did that? And then they went, there is a sinister titty music cue.
That is funny.
It's like, I'm like, I guess that that like, if you're the mute, but you're like, that's a little on the nose. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, she has tits. Like,
well, when it's revealed that she is a woman, they're like, this is treason, and the penalty was supposed to be death, but because right. she saved Shang, he spares her life because of that.
Rewarding and male mediocrity. I have to date this man because he didn't murder me? doesn't seem fair.
No. So instead, they just abandon her, and she feels as though she's a failure, and she's about to turn and go back home. But this is also when she sees Shan Yu's army rise up from the avalanche, like the snow, and she realizes she has to go warn the army. So she does this. She arrives in the city. No one will listen to her because she's a woman, mm-hmm. and these men do not believe
and they view her
women.
As a traitor. Yes. Also,
and they're like, having a parade for her work, but it's yes, just yes. men.
They're taking credit for
yes.
It's infuriating. Yeah.
Movie and she's like,
she's like, the Huns are about to kill you, and they're like, go away, shut up.
Yeah, while they're like spending however much money, literally taking credit for her yeah. work, you're just like, what a beautiful parade that she cannot get through uh-huh. that she gets no credit for.
Right.
God.
It's like, it's a celebration of her accomplishment that she has to overcome.
Yes.
Yeah.
So rude. So, and then during this victory celebration, the Huns attack and kidnap the emperor, but Mulan and her friends fight back and dress in drag while doing it,
which,
to trick right. the Huns. Yes. They save the emperor, and Mulan kills Shan Yu, and the emperor is like, wow, Mulan, you're so cool. Here's a spot on my council. And she's like, no, I'm good. Actually, I'm going to go home to my family. She returns home. Her family realizes, oh, you have brought us great honor mm-hmm. For being a war hero. And then Shang shows up and he's like, ooh, you're cute, I just realized.
This is where, like, in retrospect, you're just like,
yeah, I'm not crazy. And I'm not happy about the ending.
This is...
But...
And that's...
That's the movie.
The movie.
So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come right back to discuss.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part?
Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
And we're back.
Yes.
So because we just finished Caitlin's famous recap.
Oh, thanks.
I think that on the rewatch, the ending is one of the parts of the movie that holds up the least well for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like, you know, at the climax of the movie, the whole country bows to her. I'm like weeping.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most cathartic, amazing, like this woman who has been through this intense sacrifice and like she's done so much and she's finally like just getting credit for what she did.
Mm-hmm.
It's so just like you don't get to see that a lot, especially right. in a kids movie. And then to see what the like where that leads to is I feel like you see this whole movie of Mulan kicking open this door that was not open for women.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie ends with that door just kind of shutting behind
mm-hmm.
her because
yeah.
The, and it especially bothers me in the way that they wrote that scene with, between her and the emperor and then how the emperor talks to Li Shang about her after she leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which he basically is just saying she's not like the other girls. It doesn't make him reconsider. Should women be given more opportunities?
Yeah.
Should women be allowed to be in the military? He's like, you don't meet a girl like that every dynasty. Wink, wink. And it's just like totally missing the point of what the movie seemed to have such a great understanding of. And they're just like, oh, like, yeah, women can do stuff as long as they're like mm-hmm. this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And even she is just sent back home to domesticity and a boyfriend, and she has to be okay with that.
Right.
Like, to be fair, that is how the legend also kind of ends. Is
the legend ends so much worse.
Yeah.
Like, it's so like, much more tragic.
Like, but it's like, it's 1998, and I feel like a movie that does so much more than most movies made for young girls mm-hmm. do. Like, they could have taken some artistic license there and could have given her a life.
Right.
That didn't have to just do mm-hmm. with, and she has a boyfriend now, mm-hmm. and that, and the end.
Right. And I have complicated feelings about this because, like, the emperor is like, hey, you're so great that I want to offer you a position on my council. He's, like, giving him right. this position of power. And she refuses to do that. She's like, I'd rather go home and be with my family. And that's her choice.
Mm-hmm.
But also the movie makes her make that choice. And like,
they don't need to do that. I don't know.
Right.
It just felt weird. And I was glad that at least it's like, oh, she was offered an opportunity. But that almost makes it feel weirder to me of like her whole like the Disney Renaissance model of like the heroine at the beginning sings about what she wants. And it's to be like seen for being different, and that's okay. And then mm-hmm. at the end, she just decides to be the same. Like, that doesn't even feel consistent with the character.
Yeah, right. I feel like all of those two points are really good, consistent with the way that this movie portrays Mulan. I think maybe what they were trying to do mm-hmm. is harken back to the myth, which has Mulan being like, I love my family so much, and yeah. war is going to come between my family, and I have to stop the war so that I can be with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the movie does that very well. I think the movie focuses more on her individuating herself
yeah.
and proving herself. And so it is distinctly disappointing at the end when she reverts, when she gets, I mean, Li Shan has a boyfriend, which is great, but like that's mm-hmm. not, that doesn't feel like where we've been led.
Yeah. And that yeah. also like was never her goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like it didn't, we weren't led to believe that she, the movie starts with her outright not wanting a relationship in any way, to the point where she's mm-hmm. like really frustrated that it's being forced upon
right.
her.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's, I feel like at least it's like, you know, she's choosing her partner mm-hmm. and that is different from what is being presented to her at the beginning, but it just feels like not a fair compromise
right.
for the character that we've, I don't know. And it's weird because it's like when I was a kid and when I was watching this movie growing up, I never really thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But watching it now, it's not like, I mean, it's still an incredible movie, but I was kind of like, I feel like Mulan would want more. I don't know.
Right. And like,
well, what's your like ideal ending? How would you want to see her end up?
My ending? Okay. I was trying to think about this. I if she ends up with Li Shang, great. But I feel like if her and Li Shang they work together, maybe. Mm-hmm. And like, she's proven herself to be this incredible soldier, and maybe they could work alongside each other as, and which, I mean, that's probably not historically feasible, but mm-hmm. it's a Disney movie. Like, I'd like to see her go on and like, in my head, I'm like, flash forward to Mulan training young girls in like physical combat. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. that's badass. Even if it's in her hometown and her dad's there and he's like, I'm so proud. And her mom is like, I wish I was a character. And
I wish I had it in her life.
Right, right. But it's like Mulan training young girls, and maybe she's home with her family, but it's like something of like, she has something that's more than what she was rebelling against at the beginning.
Right. Yeah. Mine would, my version of the ending would be, if she accepts that position on the Emperor's Council, again, assuming it's, he's not like, you know, an evil dictator. We don't know the circumstances of this dynasty. We're not sure. So hopefully, you know, he's very progressive. He's, you know, he's
like more women on the council.
And right, exactly. I mean, hopefully that's why he offers Mulan the job. But she accepts the position. She moves her family to like the imperial city, so she can still be with her family. But you know, she's got this powerful position in politics and stuff like that. And you know, if she ends up with Shang, fine. But for the movie to end that way, where like he shows up and he's like, "Hey, I just realized you're
that
hot."
Can't be it. That
just feels so tacked on, especially because like what you were saying, Sita, where. Right around the low point of the movie, screenwriting degree, I hate to mention it, but she has this whole enlightened realization where she's like, maybe I didn't do this for my father, because that's what seems like her motivation is initially, where she's like, I'm going to save my father's life. And I think that's probably still part of why she makes that choice, but she realizes like, maybe I didn't do this for my father. Maybe what I really wanted was to prove that I could do things right. Like, right. Because we see her failing so miserably at like being what's expected of her as like a traditional woman and a bride. Mm-hmm. So she's like, but here's something I think I could be good at. And it turns out she is.
And it ends up, I feel like those themes end up kind of fighting with each other a little bit, where they just like, by subscribing kind of strictly to the like mythic Mulan that has existed in culture for thousands of years, and then also adding in these 90s themes, but the 90s themes don't really pay off in the way that it's written. And they kind of just, they're like, well, we have basically this ending, so let's just keep it. But it is like, she has that line where she literally like, maybe I wanted to do things right. Maybe I wanted to look in the mirror and see someone worthwhile. And that's like, I mean, she articulates that herself, and I feel like that desire is maybe paid off a little bit in the fact that, you know, China bows to her, she gets credit and she gets validation. But to think that that is like, okay, well, I'm done, I'm self-actualized, and now I can just be a wife, just doesn't, I don't know.
It feels like it undoes a lot of what had been set up.
I like previously. That they try to add these modern themes, but I just feel like they're not fully paid off on.
Yes.
I mean, it's like the themes are modern, but the actions are historic, but not. But then the historical actions undermine the themes.
Yeah, it ends up kind of like being like, in a little bit of conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think maybe in history too, women have always found ways to enact rebellion in ways that you just not obvious. And even historical record is so shitty at keeping record about women.
Right.
Like, in general, who knows if Mulan didn't. Okay, so in my version, Mulan decides that living as a man is pretty awesome. So she goes back to her hometown, tells her parents, maybe like assuages them or does something where she like assuages their fears, because there's going to be news all over about her. And she just goes on and lives as a man and like figures out like
Mulan
how, because
trans.
She's so successful as a man.
Ooh, I love this read. I let listeners, please share your ideal ending of Mulan, because we all agree the one that we get isn't the perfect one. And I mean, there just seems like there's three better ideas in the room right now.
I think so. Maybe the live action one will, you know, it'll be closer to one of these.
Well, could I really quickly share just the source material, just a quick summary of what the kind of legend and how it goes? Because I wasn't totally, I knew that it was based on something, but I didn't know if it had something to do with history or if it was strictly legend. It seems like it's legend. Mm-hmm. But so here's the quick wiki summary.
Yes.
It is officially based on the Ballad of Mulan, that goes a little something like this. It's set in the Northern Wei era, which is between 386 and 536, which is like somewhere in the time that the movie is also supposed to take place.
This is AD or BC?
AD.
AD.
But, you know, long time ago, we don't know what the politics are at this time. We still don't know who's right. I was really trying to do research of like, is this a real war? Yes. Who is right? I couldn't figure it out. I got confused. I'm sorry. The poem starts with Mulan sitting worriedly at her loom as one male from each family is called to serve in the army to defend the Tuoba realm from the Ruren invaders. Her father is old and weak, and her younger brother, which I'm like, oh, we cut him in.
Well, he's great. A dog. Remember when she's like, little brother, little brother.
And it's, yeah, he's a dog.
It's the dog.
Wow. Well, her younger brother is just a child or a dog. So she decides to take her father's place and bids farewell to her parents who support her, which I think is an interesting difference. If she tells her parents, I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that better. Yeah. Anyways, she's already skilled in fighting, having been taught martial arts, sword fighting, and archery by the time she enlists in the army, which I think is what you were saying, yeah. Sita, about her dad.
And the interesting thing about Chinese women is that like kind of feminism went through different waves. I mean, the kind of feminism that we know about ancient Chinese women during the Confucian periods are like very like subservient and like like supposed to obey the patriarchy. But Chinese women also went through periods of time where they were the head of the household and they were like more pushed to the forefront, and those records are lost to history, of course.
It's comforting to be like, maybe it happened. it seems like Mulan, especially because like for a story to persist for this long, it seems like this story was written in a period where women had more agency than possibly they do right now. So after 12 years of fighting, the army, so she's in the military for 12 years in the legend. After 12 years, the army returns and the warriors are rewarded. Mulan turns down an official post and asks only for a camel to carry her home. Wouldn't it be great if she left on a camel? She's greeted with joy by her family. Mulan dons her old clothes and meets her comrades, who are shocked that in the 12 years of their enlistment together, they did not realize she was a woman. So that's the story.
Okay.
So I feel like that element, the ending is kind of pulled from the legend in, but then like some of the parts I think about the legend that are really cool are left out. Like, what if Mulan left with her parents' blessing? That's kind of wild. And like, what if her father had actively trained her?
Yeah. Right.
That would have been, I don't know. There's like parts of this ancient story that feel more progressive than the story we're presented
with. I wonder if like this 98 adaptation was like, well, let's really heighten the patriarchy here, but then also like bow down to it by the very, like in the very final scene of the.
So did y'all check out the writing credits for this movie?
Yes.
The story is adapted by Robert C. somebody. And then the actual screenplay is written by like five different people.
Right.
One person being, I think, Chinese. I think there's one person of the five-person team.
Rita Cao.
Yeah.
Is Chinese. Her other writing credits I found were Toy Story 2 and a My Little Pony movie. So
oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah, she's solid.
Pretty solid record.
Totally solid.
Yeah.
I was reading on Quora. I got curious about what the Chinese think about Mulan, and I just love Quora and all its freaky people that write like 10 pages for every answer.
Yeah.
And one of the commenters said that Kung Fu Panda was a better depiction of Chinese culture, and I cannot disagree, because Kung Fu Panda got a lot of things right.
Well, I gotta rewatch it.
Let's talk about the depiction of Chinese culture in this movie, because a lot of the criticism I've seen around this, and again, I'm like a dumb white lady from Massachusetts, so my knowledge is limited. But for reading just a little bit about the criticism surrounding it, it seems like there is this like disconnect in adapting Eastern legend to Western pop culture. Like there is like some disconnect there, that like it works for Western audiences in some ways in a way that like doesn't always connect.
I think so. Some of the reading that I did was that Mulan, as a like the 4,000 lines poem that it is, like, you know, a lot of Chinese students have to take the entrance exams that allow them to qualify for university, and Mulan is part of that curriculum.
Oh, wow.
So so cool. It's essentially like the hardest test you have to take, and you have to know like 4,000 lines of a poem.
Holy shit.
Wow. So like Mulan has a totally different kind of place in the Chinese like psyche. It's kind of like
people resent it.
It's like like if you had to read, you know, like Catullus or something, like yeah. Latin geeks would know what Catullus is, but that's the kind of test that it is, you know?
Yeah.
So that places it in a different, like, it's very reverential, but also very scholarly. So there's mm-hmm. that part of it. But I think what I noticed in just the production design of the movie is that they just mashed up Asia in the movie. Mm-hmm. So like mm-hmm. the soldiers' uniforms looked Japanese. They yes. looked like very samurai yeah. influence. And then there were a ton of drums, which are very Korean. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think when this movie went to China, I think Chinese people were just like, what the actual fuck? Right. Like, what the fuck am I looking at on screen right now? And there's this tiny dragon that's voiced by Eddie Murphy, you know?
Well, and also named like Mushu, which is like offensive in itself. Yeah, yeah. It's named after an Americanized Chinese yeah. dish. Like, yeah. it's like, yeah. even that in itself. Like, I read some, because I didn't realize that Mushu is in the new movie. I thought he was cut out because there was a lot of valid criticism.
I might be very wrong. It might just be a dragon who is probably like photorealistic, but like CGI.
Horrifying to look at, yeah.
I can't say.
But I when the first, because a lot of the analysis I was reading was when the first trailers were coming mm-hmm. out and people were just kind of reacting to it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some American audiences were like, where's Eddie Murphy? And then the response was like, that character was offensive in a lot of ways and kind of like, and also like, I mean, at least was meaningless and had no grounding in anything that was realistic. Mm-hmm. And then at worst was like, yeah, kind of like offensive. And like, you just named something after a like Americanized Chinese dish that you've had.
Yeah.
White male writer. of which there are three on this movie.
Yes, there's a lot of them.
There is four, from what I could tell, it was four white writers, two women and one person of Chinese heritage who is a woman.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You would think, couldn't she just write the movie?
you would think. Mm-hmm.
But no, you need the backup of some people such as, and it's kind of, I mean, it seems a little sinister to me that there are some writers here who, there's two writers in particular who are cishet white male writers who literally went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. So just a person we've encountered. but especially this writer, Philip Lezebnik, who is a writer who seems to have specialized in animated children movies with non-white protagonists.
Hmm.
In spite of the fact that he is a cishet white male who went to Harvard. it's very sinister to me that you could trace a whole generation of kids mm-hmm. worth of like held misinformation, if not racism, mm-hmm. to like particular writers. But Philip Lezebnik has credits such as Pocahontas, probably the worst one of all, Mulan, The Prince of Egypt, The Road to El Dorado, The Lost Treasure of the Knights Templar, like just movie after movie after movie that mischaracterizes non-white protagonists and kind of creates these very Western narratives around cultures that they couldn't possibly understand.
I mean, those were hits, too.
They were all hits.
They yeah. were all hits. And I think that's the only color Disney really sees.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the only color Disney sees is
green.
Swish. And then the other writer who kind of has the same thing is Chris Sanders, whose mm-hmm. other biggest hit was Lilo and Stitch, which
is Hawaiian.
Is a Hawaiian culture. Yeah. Chris Sanders is from Colorado. And he also, fun fact, is it fun? I don't know. He directed that new Call of the Wild movie with Harrison Ford and a pile of tennis balls. So, you know, he's fine. He's never been held
but
accountable.
But he's finally back in his old white man genre.
Exactly. Yes. At least he's telling stories he knows, weird. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just me and my dog.
But it is, I mean, it's like the two writers with the most credits on this movie are two white men who have been telling non-white stories from a place of ignorance for their entire careers to the tune of millions of dollars. So,
uh-oh.
For your consideration.
let's take another quick break and then we will come right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global.
When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
And we're back.
And we're back.
I have a list of ways in which this movie subverts a lot of Disney movie tropes that I would like to share, especially of this Renaissance era.
Yes.
Because this is one of the later Disney Renaissance movies.
The era that fucked us all the way up.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I think people might disagree with me, but I do not think this is a princess movie. You could
the merch maybe would disagree with
the
you,
the merch
Caitlin.
Would disagree.
But I think that's also a good thing. Net
yes.
positive.
To me, unlike a lot of other Disney movies, which are like the ones that are geared toward girls, they are princess fairy tale narratives. And even though this one is kind of based in ancient legend and, you know, it does feature a female lead, it's not like a princess, you know, getting locked in a tower and needing to be saved by a man, her prince charming, any like none
she
of that
she does not
type
become
stuff.
A princess at the end. Yeah, that
no.
whole, yeah.
So, you know, just the message that rich, conventionally beautiful, usually white, young, cishet women who are princesses looking for a prince are the only type of women whose stories are worth telling. But Mulan subverts that whole thing.
Yes. I think she is the daughter of a wealthy family, though, just judging from
they got
her.
Property.
They yeah, they got property. That was a nice piece of property.
She has, like, her own, like, zip code. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like very large. And usually in China, you can tell how fancy people are by how high their doorsteps are.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. The higher the doorsteps, the wealthier they are. Because you have to like cross this like massive threshold.
Well, by that metric, yeah, they're chilling. They're good.
Keeps the rats out.
nice. Next one is that kind of like piggybacking off of it not being like a princess fairy tale movie. Mulan's goal does not have anything to do with finding a man or like having a romantic interest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while Shang does show up at her house at the end and it's implied that she ends up with him romantically, it's like not the focal point of the story in any way. It feels like more of like an afterthought, like denouement thing than any major part of the plot.
Thank you for saying denouement.
Denouement. Hey, yeah. Anytime. And I would also argue, well, here's something that I am not too happy with, but I think Shang is like not the best love interest.
I agree. But to be fair, he's hot.
He's hot.
Nipples.
To be fair, he does. I was trying. Okay, I paused. I couldn't tell.
Does he have nipples? Because Disney has this weird thing where they're like, men can be shirtless, but they can't have nipples.
He does have nipples.
He does have nipples? He did. Oh. Okay, thank you. Because I was like, King Triton didn't have nipples, and that... Yeah. that
they were flesh colored. No, King Triton does have prominent nipples.
Oh, so that they like, scale back the nipples? Because there was a time where there were shirtless men, but they didn't have nipples, because maybe King Triton's nipples scared them off.
Maybe. I don't know. But like Aladdin does not have nipples.
Aladdin. Oh, yeah. That's who famous.
I think maybe Little Mermaid was just so sexual. They were like, we got to tone it back.
Because the genie also doesn't have nipples. Both male protagonists are shirtless the whole time. Yeah. And they don't have nipples. That's and very then you're true. Just like... Who is this for?
Shane's got anatomically correct Asian male nipples.
Great. Well,
for the audience.
Another point for the movie.
The next thing on my list is that Mulan's mother is not dead. She does not have a dead mom.
But character-wise, she is not alive.
She could just be the grandma. They could have just folded that into one character.
To this day, shamefully, one of my mom's favorite Disney exchanges in the whole canon is towards the end where Mulan says, would you like to stay for dinner? And the grandma says, would you like to stay forever? My mom howls. She's like, funniest joke ever written. Like, that's my mom's bar for comedy.
I mean, it's pretty that exchange funny, but... with Mulan and her grandma. Yeah, so her mom is alive. Her mother is alive, and we also see her grandmother. Both of those characters really just want Mulan to be a bride. And the movie does frame Mulan's relationship with her father as the more important relationship in the story.
And I think a little more, like even more frustrating on top of that is like her father seems to be the only person in her family who believes that she is capable of more than being a, you know, like very conscribed feminine person, which is frustrating and like doesn't, I don't know, like that, like, her father is the one who believes in her, and her mother and her grandmother, who are both seem to be pretty strong female characters, don't believe that she's capable of more. It's like, well, then they might as well be dead. You know what I mean? I don't want them to, but you know what I mean? Like the fact that her father is the one who is presented as by far the most sympathetic character.
Yeah.
Where like, he's the one that believes in her, and he gets the big moment at the end of the greatest honor of all is having you as my daughter. And I'm like, weeping, but I'm also critical.
Right. Next thing is, from what I could tell, the villain is not queer quoted like the villains are.
No, it's just racist.
It's just racist.
So that's way better.
They don't even have human skin tones. That's like They're gray.
And he has yellow eyes.
That is like a major issue I had on a rewatch of like, they are drawn to not be people.
Yeah.
The people who we are not given any perspective on, why are they fighting? What are they fighting for? They're like, they're on the opposite side of our protagonist. And so we're going to draw them as gray, immortal animals.
What if they're fighting for like, universal health care, and the emperor is just like, fuck you, get out of here.
Most likely.
What if they're literally canvassing for Bernie?
I mean, that is how Bernie Bros appear online. As the Huns.
But then it's like, but ultimately they have some good ideas, you know. I don't know.
My guess is that in the context of this kind of time period in China, there's a bunch of warring tribes. There's like, there's no real China, like, per se, you know. China's in its 4,000 years of history has had so many different iterations of its kingdom. So the sort of fancy side, the fancy Chinese in this movie are like the ones that have cities and stuff. Most likely they were the people that were levying taxes against the people that were more nomadic.
They're centrists
because they have the infrastructure to do it and to collect taxes. And the invaders, usually nomadic invaders, don't want to pay taxes. That's why they're nomadic. And maybe that might be what the invasion's about, but the timeline is also super distorted.
In the movie, it says it takes place during the Han Dynasty.
Yeah.
Which
ended says, like 100 years before like the Huns.
The legend and the movie don't take place in the same era.
No, they don't. Not even close.
I don't even know how intentionally that's done, or if that was just like scattershot white writer being like, here, because the Han Dynasty, from what research I've done, seems to be kind of like a golden age of Chinese history. So I don't know if a white writer did a light Google and was like, sure, let's put it here. But that's not, it seems like the ballad of Mulan takes place after where we're being told the movie takes place, which would be in BC, not AD.
Yeah.
So confusing.
I know.
Indeed. Ancient history is wild.
In any case, the villain is not queer-coded the way that many villains of this, you know, Disney Renaissance era are.
I wouldn't give that a point, though, because it's just racist instead of being queer-coded. It's like and making it to seem like it's a zombie animal.
That's true. Okay, so withdraw. But
so instead of queer-coded, it's just worse.
Well, and I don't mean to sound like I'm defending anything here, but the queer-coded villains are also racist in these, in, you know, Lion King and Ursula, because they always have darker skin and things like that.
Yes. I mean, and this is the very least, but like at least in some cases, the queer-coded villains have been reclaimed. Mm-hmm. I do not see anyone reclaiming this villain.
Like, no one Sean is like, Yu, I see my myself. King.
Like, fuck you, Disney. I'm reclaiming Sean Yu. Like, no one has reclaimed Sean Yu.
No. That's true.
Plenty have reclaimed Ursula in a very powerful way that is like a middle finger to the Disney Corporation that's also given him a lot of money.
She's a businesswoman and a lawyer, of course.
Sean Yu has made $0 in the past 10 years. If the color we're talking about is green, Sean Yu is negative.
Another one, Mulan never has to be saved, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't notice any moment where she had to be. But she does save. People. She saves Shang during the avalanche. And then again, toward the end, when Shan Yu is about to kill Shang, and Mulan like throws a shoe at him. And she's like, it was me who took your victory away. And then Mulan and Shan Yu battle each other, which leads me to the next kind of trope being subverted, which is Mulan gets to defeat the villain during the climax of the movie.
And she fights with weapons and not pots, pans, domestic items, which is how we normally see if a woman is allowed to fight and defend herself. It is with traditionally feminine objects.
Right. Like Mulan is using like real weapons, whereas her friends, her army buddies, who are dressed in drag, by the way, in this climactic sequence, they are using like fruit to fight the bad guys. Yes, so it's like, I guess, I mean, I don't know what that suggests exactly.
It's almost kind of like an inversion that you're like, what does this mean?
Like men who are presenting as women still using domestic items to fight with.
I think I'm fine with it.
It didn't bother me.
Well, the fun part of that scene on the roof with Shang Yu is that she's fighting him with like the sort of the Born Identity items, like a random stick or something.
Right.
But then she takes Shang Yu's sword from him.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's the badass moment where you're like, oh, shit's about to get real. You got your sword taken away, racist stereotype.
You're like, listen, racist villain, she got to the top of the pole. You don't understand. Yeah. Like, it's exciting.
Yeah.
I was worried that this wouldn't be the case because, you know, we see in Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, where even though the protagonists of those movies are women, it's always the male love interest who steps in and, like, defeats the villain.
Yeah.
But so I was like, oh, no, is this going to happen again? Especially when
I don't even know where Shang is for the majority of the movie.
Out or he something. Does.
Yeah, he's like, I'm asleep.
He does kind of burst in and fight Shan Yu for like a minute, but then he gets knocked away, and then Mulan takes over and fights with weapons. She uses cannons, she uses swords and bows and arrows and like all this stuff. And Shang gets pretty much sidelined from that final climactic battle sequence.
He breaks her fall. That's how important to the fight he is. Yeah. He breaks her fall.
He does what a well-placed pole could do.
Those were the main things that I clocked in terms of this movie subverting. And I just think that like Mulan as a character overall is just better characterized, and like someone the little girls and anyone who's watching this movie can look up to far more than
the main strength of this movie is Mulan. Mm-hmm. Like, she fucking rules.
Yes.
Like, no one will ever talk me out of Mulan rules. She's amazing. And she's also, from what I was able to track the first non-white person, whether justified or not, included in Disney princess canon, mm-hmm. who isn't sexualized within an inch of her life. Because mm-hmm. that was true. A huge, I mean, with Jasmine, Esmeralda, and Pocahontas, yeah. they were three brown women of different ethnicities mm-hmm. who were over-sexualized, and it was a big problem. And this mm-hmm. was like one of the first things where you're like, did Disney take a note? Because Mulan is not sexualized. Mm-hmm.
Her body's mostly hidden.
Right. And that kind of lines up with her, like her character has no vested interest in appearing mm-hmm. in a sexualized way. And it's like, it's one thing if like a female character is like, I want to present a certain way, mm-hmm. but that is not her stated intent, and the movie doesn't subject her to anything that doesn't make sense. And I thought that like that is like unfortunately a huge step forward mm-hmm. for Disney Renaissance movies, especially is not
right.
Like, I mean, not they sexualize all women, but they especially over sexualize non-white women.
Yes.
So in that way you're like,
and there could have been an opportunity, because there's that scene where she takes a bath in yeah. like the pond.
Yes.
She gets naked.
And then there's the, oh no, she like, has tits.
Right, scene. Right. But like all of that is handled like very responsibly as far as I was
well
concerned.
As well as PG is handled.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then like that reminds me of the moment in Little Mermaid when Ariel has just gotten her legs for the first time and she's swimming to the surface, and then she like bursts through the surface, and like there's this shot, she's like silhouetted by the sunlight, mm-hmm. but it's like really sexualized where she like wet hair whips around and her whole body is writhing and stuff.
I mean, how can all of my various eating disorders be traced back to Disney movies? Don't want to think about it. Mm. But I don't think Mulan was a contributor. No. So,
yay!
Well, that's a good transition into talking about how masculinity is
yes.
portrayed in this movie. I think that it's mostly good points that are brought up, but I do have some thoughts on it, mm-hmm. where I feel like Mulan's character in many ways is presented as a direct challenge to like Mushu, who is a character that I'm like, I honestly am like on the rewatch, I'm like not very attached to, because mm-hmm. he is like, the joke is that he's very fixated on his own size, mm-hmm. and the joke is that he's kind of misogynist, but we like him, and like I kind of had it with that, and like whatever, Eddie Murphy's warming up for Donkey and we salute him. But in general, I mean, I like those scenes where Mulan is presented with quote unquote traditional masculinity, which is like sweaty and aggressive mm-hmm. and mean. And mm-hmm. she's kind of like, ew, I hate yeah. that I have to, she resents that she has to participate in it. There's that scene where Mushu is talking her through her first interaction as a man with a man, and it's like she punches him in the face and she slaps his ass. Yeah. And that's the whole interaction, and it like sort of works, and you're just like, okay. But and then there's that other the other interaction that Mulan has that I feel like is in complete challenge to the masculinity presented by the soldiers, is when they're singing A Girl Worth Fighting For, yes. a song that I have problems with. Uh-huh. But where Mulan's only line in that song is she's like, how about a girl that has a brain that always speaks her mind? And then everyone's like, fuck you. Gross. Well,
that was the moment where I was like, female comic.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like she's almost fitting in, but then she almost stands up for women, and everyone's like, get out of here.
Right, because the lines before that are like, we want a woman who's really hot, who will, you know, really congratulate me on my masculinity, my battle scars. And then the one guy's like, I don't care what she looks like, but she has to cook me meals all the time,
which is a fat joke also, yes. on top of that. Mm-hmm. It's just that I've kind of conflicted with how the soldiers that aren't Li Shang, because I feel like he's in like romantic interest category. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the three soldiers that she becomes friends with, there's good things and there's bad things, because by the end, they realize they should never have underestimated mm-hmm. Ping Mulan, mm-hmm. and that a woman is capable of so much more than what they were singing about. But ultimately, it's kind of, I feel like kind of falls into like the friendly misogynist trope, mm. where we hear them there's a lot of like constantly they're like, I want a hot woman. I am very like committed to this style of soldier misogyny that also feels very Western too. Mm-hmm. It's like very 1998 Western culture. But we also love them. And it's so it's like they sort of learn a lesson at the end, but I feel like it doesn't go far enough because they are just like lovable misogynists ultimately.
I think their supposed redeeming scene is at the end in that battle where Shang Yu comes out and he's fighting Li Shang and then the emperor's gone and they actively decide to group around Mulan. Right. And when they make that choice, that's the choice that's supposed to justify all the misogyny, right. I think.
And I like that it lands somewhere. Mm-hmm. But there's still a whole song about misogyny that we've been thinking that we know by heart. And you're just
So everything in a movie is intentional. Nothing's accidental. Right. Somebody was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for that song. Mm-hmm. And then singers were also booked time separately to sing that song. And then sound engineers were also paid to mix that song. So when you think about how much work it takes to put a song into the movie, you really have to question, like, does this misogyny anthem have to be in this movie about like empowering a young girl?
You only get three songs in this movie. And this is one of them.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Is that all? Anthem. Reflection, Make a Man Out of You, and a girl was fighting girl. For.
Oh, there's sure one at the beginning it. When there's the matchmaker song.
Oh, there's the song. Matchmaker song. I mean, 50% of the songs are aggressively misogynist. The first song and the last song.
So, once again, I don't want to sound like I'm defending anything that's bad. But, like, I read that as one of the obstacles that, like, Mulan has to overcome is, like, misogyny. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's why that song is there. Mm-hmm. Do we need it there? Do those lyrics
does
need to
have
be
to
the
be
way
so
they
catchy?
Are?
Right.
Does it have to slap? Like, It's like they did too good of a job with the misogyny anthem. And I feel the same. I feel the same way about, like, I used to tell a joke about this, and I was like, I gotta grow up. But one of the best songs in Hunchback of Notre Dame is the priest singing about how he wants to murder a woman if she won't fuck him. Mm-hmm. And it slaps. It's such a good song, and I know every word, and you're like, this can't, like...
The villain songs are always the best songs. And maybe we can interpret this as the villain song.
Maybe.
Because misogyny is the villain.
You doesn't sing a song. I mean, it's like, I feel like that is kind of a gray area. But like, I feel like the song with the worst message shouldn't slap the hardest.
I see your point. Yes.
That's a new rule. Mm. I'm putting it down.
I do like.
It has to be like not the best song.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should be like the collaboration between Phil Collins and NSYNC. Yes. You know, like that's.
It should be mediocre.
That should be the writing team behind the song.
If it has to be there, it has to be like mediocre and not memorable. Because if it's good, then you'll know all the words and you'll like, whether intentionally or not, sort of internalize it.
Sure.
You know?
I do like, though, where, like, Mulan's relationship with those, like, three soldier friends of hers, like, lands where they, once they realize, oh, she is worth trusting, they get on her side again, they dress in drag, and then they, like, use the method that she used to, like, shimmy up the pole during their training.
Yeah.
So that gets, like, called back to.
That was cool.
That's how they, like, get into, like, the Emperor's, like, chambers so they can save him, like, all that stuff. So I at least like how Mulan has allies by the end. Of course, none of them are women. She has no female friends in this story.
Well, that's the big failing of... Well, not, I wouldn't call it a failing because the story wasn't sort of meant for this, but that the myth of Mulan doesn't spread amongst young women and make young women want to, like, take places for their fathers in wars. And Mulan remains an exceptional woman. And that's always, like, the thing, the pick me trope, you know, like, where you pick me, I'm special. I'm not like these other girls. And unfortunately, Mulan does fall into I'm not like other girls territory.
Just you're saying that, it's just like, because we've been making fun of the not like the other girls trope for so long. But the way you just, I feel like the not like the other girls trope, there isn't really a not like the other guys trope. Mm. And I feel like that is a way to tell women that you have to believe that you are the only person who can do this as a way to discourage you from encouraging other women to do the same thing that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it does feel like a, I mean, even in in our common experience of comedy, like, I was always frustrated by, like, why are all the, like, it's so easy for male comics to make friends with each other. Mm-hmm. There seems to be really not a lot of intense competition among them, where when I was starting, I felt like female comics were felt to be in competition because there were just less spots for them. Mm-hmm. And so a defense tactic would be a not like the other girls, like, yeah. Well, what I do isn't what the other people do. And it is, I feel like it's like a patriarchal thing, mm-hmm. to be told, like, you have to be so confident in yourself that you want to actively discourage other women from doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
I mean, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately, the idea of, like, not like the other girls, and what does that mean? Because on one hand, like, the way this movie partly frames that idea is Mulan kind of rejecting femininity in a certain way, or at least the type of femininity that is often forced on women by men or by patriarchal standards.
Sure.
And that might make her seem like not one of the other girls, but that's in a way that, like, that's her choice. She's expressing her authentic self, you know. She's she might not be as feminine as other women, or, you know, whatever, but to me, I didn't really have any problem with that, the way it's at least that specific aspect of it is depicted in this movie, because the whole setup, like the whole first act of this movie, is us being shown Mulan not fitting the mold of what's expected of a woman and a bride in her community and culture, or, like, you know, the world of this movie, because what's expected of a woman is to be quiet and delicate and obedient, and, you know, these porcelain doll wives who will bear children. And, you know, Mulan doesn't really want to participate in that. There's that whole song, the, you know, the one that we forgot about, the "You'll Bring Honor to Us All," yeah. I think is the name of it. But, you know, the lyrics are things like, "A girl can bring honor to her family in one way, by striking a good match. This could be the day. Men want girls with good taste, calm, obedient, who work fast-paced, with good breeding and a tiny waist.
You'll bring honor." Just sing it, Caitlin.
I don't know the tune.
I know, but I think that that song, I just have such conflicted feelings about it, because I feel like that song is used to make every woman in the movie who is in Mulan to look bad.
Yes.
Like, why is that? You know? Yeah. I feel like it comes from the same place.
Yes.
The only ally to Mulan in her life, even remotely, is her father.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, yes. I agree with that.
Every woman in her life is against her.
I guess what I'm saying is just the idea of, like, you know, being yourself, and if yourself is a little, like, you know, tomboyish, or if you, like, don't want to be a wife, and, like, that's just, like, who you are and what you want, and, like, as long as you're, like, not dismissing or judging other people who do want that, which I don't think Mulan isn't, is. Yeah, so I agree. There is, like, a conflicting message to be had here, because that whole setup serves to show, like, yeah, Mulan isn't this, like, obedient, submissive woman. She's strong. She's outspoken. She's smart, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it does end up painting all those women who do, like, want to go to the matchmaker and be matched with a husband. Mm-hmm. It makes them seem like, oh, what fools.
It paints them very broadly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to think about everything economically, because every decision that these characters make in life is tied to, like, how they're able to live, is that the women are making these choices because they have to marry out of the family because the family can no longer support them, you know. So it's like they literally are getting married to live. That is
right.
That's something that's, like, in the first brush of this movie, it feels like a choice, but it's really not a choice.
If it's frustrating to see a movie of any, I mean, and Mulan is not the only movie to do this, and it's not the worst offender of this, but to make it seem like this is what women truly deeply want because they are petty and vapid, as opposed to, like, literally this is the only way in this historical context to survive, and there are complicated feelings that come with that. There is an opportunity to show that with her mother and her grandmother, but it just kind of ends up seeming like they're not exactly shrewish, but, like, rigid in that way of, like, And I feel like as a kid especially, you don't fully understand where that's coming from, and the movie doesn't really attempt to explain it to you.
No. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost too complicated for a Disney movie to explain, but the place it comes from does feel shallow. No, I agree.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's like, but ultimately Mulan is the like the best heroine in Disney canon up to this point. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have to give it its due.
And you know what else she is?
What?
The baldest woman in charge.
She is the baldest woman.
Even though she doesn't like shave her head or anything, but she does cut her hair.
That is like such a great
moment.
And
that montage, I'm like, it does so much to like.
It's like almost bawling
from it, and I'm like, oh, this like glorifies going to war, but I'm like, but I'm crying, so I don't know what I feel.
It's like ultimately, we do see her like making a gigantic sacrifice for the patriarchal figure in her life to go to war for them. But you're also like, yeah.
But then she realizes, like, I did this for myself. So I don't know.
I love it. I mean, and the idea of, I've read a number of things that are about gender performativity theory as it pertains to this movie. Mm-hmm. One great analysis I read was independently published by a writer named Julianne Fung, who generally praises and argues that the main theme of Mulan is a film that is about gender performance. She's using the hit. She's using Judith Butler, you know, like she's but saying that basically one of the things that makes Mulan remarkable is that she recognizes that gender is in many ways a performance, and she learns to perform it to and then by the end of the movie has like effectively convinced hyper-masculine soldiers that gender is a performance to the point where they're willing to experiment with it themselves at the climax where they dress in drag very confidently and are successful. And you can make an argument of like, is a mockery being made of them? Is it kind of played for laughs? I think in some ways it is.
Yes.
In the same way that at the climax of The Lion King, Timon is wearing this little like grass skirt.
Oh,
and he's like, it's not totally great because it's a little bit of joke, but it also like on paper, it's like these hyper-masculine soldiers are willing to play around with gender performativity theory. Mm-hmm, and like, that doesn't happen a lot. That's cool. Well, and they're not punished for it. They're successful.
Yeah. They defeat the villain.
Yeah.
Who's just advocating for socialized medicine. That's
it's crazy. That
he's gray because he needs healthcare.
Because he's sick.
Literally.
He has yellow eyes. He's jaundiced.
Why is Medicare for All the villain? I don't understand.
One of my favorite lines in the movie is when Mulan like first shows up to like the boot camp, and she's something happens where she like punches one of the guys to like try to fit in and like be a man. But she says, you know how it is when you get those manly urges and you just got to kill something, because like she is, it's like just, you know, gender performance.
The last thing I wanted to say just of like something that because I've been trying to sort of keep up on. As of this recording, none of us have seen the new Mulan movie. It's not out. I really hope that it's good.
The other ones have not been.
No, I mean, but it's also like
they've all made money.
But it's very possible that it'll be fine and make $1 billion, which is also like whatever. I'll see it.
Yeah,
I have yet to see a live action adaptation in theaters.
I've seen most of them, and
I have an AMC pass, and I still haven't.
I know, I'm part of the problem.
But like this one, I will see because Mulan means, I think, of this era the most to be out of any of them. But there is still, it seems like, that persistent problem of this movie is trying to be a negotiation between the American and Chinese film industries, the two most powerful film industries on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I have read about the plot of this movie, there have been narrative changes, but all of them that I've read about, you're just kind of like, is that better or is it just different?
Yeah.
Where in this adaptation, the idea of arranged marriage is really, really pushed.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like, this was never even a part of the source material. Like, it's really frustrating. And it seems like what the live action 2020 adaptation is referring to, instead of the source material, which was more progressive than the 1998 adaptation, is it's referring to an earlier draft of the 1998 adaptation that was scrapped. Because what I found in my research was the first pitch of this movie is that Mulan is betrothed to Li Shang, and that through resentment of the person she's betrothed to, she's motivated to pose as a man to get out of an arranged marriage, which is, however you feel about it, very different from the source material.
Right.
Yeah. And that seems to be, and I don't know what the exact, but it seems like it's, instead of It's just like, man, something written in ancient times is more progressive than what we're doing now. Jesus fucking Christ.
There's an alternate version of her love interest, which is that she was, and it's actually a really progressive vision of love, which is something I don't think about with ancient Chinese stories. Mm-hmm. But she's engaged. She's one of the most beautiful women, most accomplished women in the village. And she's engaged to a man who appreciates her unconditionally. And even though they're absolutely in love with each other and he's like literally Mr. Perfect, she breaks the engagement to save her dad.
Mm. Wow.
It's like fully like seated choices as an individual. So she breaks her perfect engagement with her perfect man to go save her dad. And then during the course of the battle, she meets her fiance again. And by this time, because her wow. fiance is such an amazing man, he's the military strategist in this war. So she has to hide from him because she's like in full drag as a man. So in her sort of hidden agenda where she's on a different side of the mountain from him so that he can't out her, uh-huh. that's how she defeats the enemies because she's in the right wow. place at the right time.
So which is also layers. Right? Like, how do I feel about it? It's more interesting than this idea that I just read. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need to take a second on that one. The last thing that I had to say was just a funny anecdote that just, I think just like speaks to how rigid the Disney formula was, especially at this time where it's like female protagonist has to sing a song about what she wants. At the beginning, she has an animal sidekick and a secondary animal sidekick. This is like well documented in all of them. I think it's most clearly taken from Pocahontas where you have Miko the raccoon and Flit the bird. There's two. And Mulan is a copy paste of that where I guess that like executives were pushing the cricket so much. No one wanted the cricket. Everyone was like, the cricket doesn't do anything. Cricket can't talk. Why is the cricket here? Everyone, including the two cishet white male directors, were like, we don't want the cricket. Director Barry Temple said, quote, the directors didn't want the cricket in the movie. Story department didn't want the cricket in the movie. The only people who wanted him in the movie were Michael Eisner.
I had a pet cricket when I was a child.
And then Fairy Temple says, I would sit in meetings and they'd say, well, where's the cricket during all this? And someone would say, fuck the cricket. So just if you're wondering why the cricket is very spark, I guess everyone was just like, we don't know what to do with the cricket. We already have Eddie Murphy. What more do you want from us?
Yeah.
I mean, great. The cricket is Mushu's sidekick.
I was a sidekick of a sidekick.
He's like a fourth tier sidekick.
Yeah.
Justice for the cricket.
But he knows how to write. We see him like writing something on a leaf.
He can read.
He can read and write. He's very educated.
Yeah. Why can't we? Justice for the cricket. No one wanted it.
Going back to the live action thing, the live action Mulan seems to have eliminated the villain of Shan Yu and added instead a witch. The hawk or the falcon or whatever type of bird that is that we see in the animated version is now a witch who can animorph into this bird.
Remains to be seen whether this is a good idea.
Right. I mean, it adds another female character, but it could be
girl on girl violence.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Gong Li is amazing, so I'm here for it.
Yay! Oh, good, good.
And then Mulan seems to have a sister now, as referenced in one of the trailers. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, hard to say how important that character will be, but they seem to be doing what all these live action Disney movies are doing, which is like add some female characters, some female friends for, you know, the women, the female protagonist in the movie to like appease fans probably.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we are see, and it's also a female director of the new Mulan movie. Although there's still
white.
She is a white lady from New Zealand, and so I feel like it kind of remains to be seen to how effective this adaptation will be. I feel like there is a lot of, and Lindsay once again, Queen Lindsay Ellis has done an excellent, if kind of like, oh no, to watch video essays about the kind of wokeifying of these Disney reboots and how meaningful is it and how much of it is motivated by money and just saying things that modern audiences wanting to hear while still not ultimately like updating what their values are.
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
I want to be, I'm cautiously optimistic, but but 500 of these movies have come out and none of them have been good.
Mm-mm.
I hope it's good.
Yes. I hope so too.
Does the movie pass the Bechdel test?
I don't think so.
I actually forgot to pay attention once again.
I think, yeah, the grandma and the mom might have had a conversation about Mulan, which technically passes the Bechdel test, right?
I think it depends. I think on a like, strictly, like, it may pass once, but the context of what they're talking about is always marriage.
Yes.
Right. And marriage to a man.
I feel like it doesn't pass. I don't know. I was reading in the forums of, like, there's been more so than almost any other movie I've ever checked on this, because but at the end I was like, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. And then I checked in the forums and people are back and forth. A lot of people are like, technically, yes. Some people say that the female ancestors talk to each other, but we don't know what their names are. So for us, that doesn't pass. Uh-huh. I'm going to say that it doesn't pass. And I think that that's a testament to the fact that this is a movie where we have a very strong female protagonist who has no woman to talk to.
Yeah.
Right, because even the conversations between women, either whether it's, you know, Mulan and her mother or grandmother or the matchmaker, the context, like we said, of almost every one of those conversations, even though there might be like two line exchanges where a man's name isn't mentioned, the context of the entire conversation will still be like, are you primped enough to be a bride kind of thing to a man?
I think that this is kind of a movie ultimately that I, to my grave, will defend Mulan. I love Mulan, the person. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of how this movie portrays women, it ultimately is like the exceptional woman and not that women are exceptional.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
That's a nice way of putting it.
That's my poll quote. Ooh, also, war is bad. Bad and war is bad is what I'd like for you to talk to take
put it
away.
On a t-shirt.
Bye-bye.
Well, that brings us to our nipple scale, 0 to 5 nipples, yes, based on its representation of women. I mean, all things considered, it does a pretty good job, at least compared to other comparable Disney Renaissance movies. It is, you know, the most empowering one to date. And then, you know, then Moana came along and we're like, wee.
Well, but Moana came along almost 20 years later. Yeah. And Moana isn't perfect.
Yes.
Which, contrary to our critique.
But like I said, I wish I had this movie to grow up with. Instead, I like latched on to Little Mermaid, and we already talked about how many problems that movie has. I think I'll give it a 3. That might be a little too generous, or maybe not generous enough. Sometimes I really misfire on the nipple rating, and, you know, it's a hard metric. But, you know, I think the way that it subverts a lot of the tropes, specifically of Disney movies, while it also adheres to a lot of kind of the, you know, problematic things that we've already discussed. Yeah, I think I'll stick with a 3. Mulan as a character is terrific. I hope this live action reboot does her even more justice. Remains to be seen. But 3 nipples. I will give one of them to Shang and his visible nipples. I will give I'll just give the other 2 to Mulan.
I'm going to go 3.5 on this. Mm-hmm. I'm also very biased towards this movie because it's like one of those movies that I have seen a million times, and it feels very like in my DNA of just how much I love it. But I feel like for its time, this is as progressive as children's media was getting on a mass scale. Mm-hmm. I think that like young people in general seeing this movie like got a view of a female protagonist that they really had never gotten on a mass scale prior to this point. She is never a damsel in distress. She is very motivated. She is amazing. I feel like the main fault of this movie is not letting that inspire the women around her and making her, I feel like it almost is kind of oppressive to isolate her as the exception to the rule rather than someone who could inspire the women around her. And plus the other thing, I mean, I think the way that the Huns are portrayed is like flat out racist. The fact that this movie was directed by cishet white men and majority written by them, and the more you learn about them, the less good it gets. There's a lot of classic Disney faults going on here, but I think that they, in spite of a lot of stuff, they managed to pull off, I think, maybe their most progressive movie to date at this time. And
at least a lot of them, a lot of the cast are voiced
by Asian actors.
A lot, but not all of them.
Not all of them, but more than I expected, honestly, when I went through
Harvey
IMDb.
Harvey Firestein is in the vocal cast. Firestein.
So you're like, he's one of the soldiers, right?
Yes, he is. And so you're like, you know, Eddie Murphy's warming up for Donkey, whatever. Like, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's of its time, such as the Stevie Wonder 98 Degrees collab. Couldn't have happened in any year but 1998. Ultimately, I think it's net positive. I would happily show this movie to a young person today. Mm-hmm. I think it super holds up. And it's kind of, I don't know, it definitely changed my perspectives at the time. Yeah. And it's great.
Yay.
I love it. 3.5 nips. 2 go to Mulan. 1.5 go photorealistically to Li Shang.
Nice.
So I think I will do 3 nips on Mulan, 2 to Mulan, 1 to Li Shang being portrayed as a leading man Asian love interest, which is pretty rare in mm-hmm. all yes. movies across all American like filmmaking history. Mm-hmm. So, nipple really taken away for just a weird mashup of Asia they presented.
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like they could have definitely done more research, just been a little bit more specific, and yeah. just I don't know, ask one Chinese person. Other than was
the one Chinese, like, woman of Chinese descent who worked on this movie.
Yeah.
Or on the writing team. Yeah.
But otherwise, thoroughly enjoyable. Really love this movie.
Yeah.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, Sita, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming back.
We always love having you. What would you like to plug? Where can people follow you?
I am working on a lot of things, but none of them are pluggable. So okay. Just follow me on my Twitter. I'm at Slowbear, SLOBEAR.
Nice.
Amazing.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.